This is Radio Boston. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. Recent revelations that Harvard administrators searched the email accounts of the university's resident deans has sparked outrage among Harvard faculty members and reignited the debate around modern technology and workplace privacy.
First, a little background on this story, which the Boston Globe broke this past weekend. It all started last year with a cheating scandal in which about 70 Harvard students were ultimately forced to leave the school for plagiarizing and collaborating on a take-home exam. After that, Harvard learned that internal information about the incident had been passed on to the news media. That prompted Harvard administrators to secretly search the email accounts of 16 deans to try to find out who leaked that information.
Which has prompted some members of the faculty to respond with words like shocked, dismayed, and disgusted for what they see as a breach of personal and academic privacy by university administrators.
A statement from Harvard says the email searches were part of a larger effort to protect student privacy. It also says the searches were narrow and limited, that they searched only the subject lines and did not review the content of any email. And Harvard says the searches were approved by the university's general counsel.
So while Harvard debates whether or not these particular email searches were necessary or justified, this is the latest case that raises big questions about privacy in the workplace. Listeners, does your employer have the right to monitor your emails, your text messages, your telephone conversations at work? If you're using company-owned equipment, including phones, computers, or even Wi-Fi networks, does your employer have the right to follow what you do and say? Where does your professional life end and your private life begin? Have you thought about this? Does it concern you? Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. And you can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. There's already a bit of a conversation going on our Facebook account at Radio Boston/Facebook. And joining us now to dig a little deeper into this topic is Carol Rose. She's executive director of the ACLU of Massachusetts. And Carol Rose, thanks so much for coming in. Great to have you.
Nice to be here. Thank you.
Also joining us is Lewis Maltby. He's president of the National Work Rights Institute, which tries to improve the legal protection of human rights in the workplace. And Lewis Maltby, welcome to Radio Boston. Great to have you.
Thank you very much.
So I want to start with this Harvard story, but use it as a springboard for a larger discussion around this issue. And let me start with you, Carol. What concerns you most about this particular story coming out of Harvard around this email search?
Well, I mean, there's really two things. One is that obviously the privacy protections of the law just simply haven't kept pace with the technology. I mean, for people who are alarmed by this, they should realize that the government actually can look at all of your email now without a warrant requirement. And so that can be happening to all of us, even if we're not at Harvard. And the second thing is, with regard to the academy, with Harvard and other academic institutions, I think it raises very serious questions about the kind of privacy protections that are necessary for academic freedom. In a place where you want people to be free to converse, to speak, to think, to have creative and innovative ideas, you have to create a safe environment so people feel like not everything they do is being watched. That's the very essence of academic freedom. So I think from that perspective, this is a uniquely concerning story.
You mentioned, though, two things there. One is the fear of the government being able to look at what we do. But as you mentioned, this is a situation of sort of Harvard looking at Harvard folks and what they do. Is there a distinction there that we need to keep in mind?
Well, you know, it's interesting that you raise that. The distinction is getting blurred because increasingly private institutions may be collecting information, and it depends on what Harvard's going to do with it. Are they going to turn it over to law enforcement, for example? And if so, should there be a warrant requirement? So that same is true of your telephone company, by the way, and your internet service provider. And so the distinction between the private and the government is increasingly becoming blurred. But one place you could draw a line is any information that is turned over to the government needs to have a warrant.
Lewis Maltby, let me come to you. I mean, my guess is that most of us who work for companies who might be, I don't know, using a company iPhone, for an example, or a company computer, or even at home, don't quite understand just how much authority the company has to read what we write and to sort of monitor what we do pretty much 24/7. Am I right about that concern?
Absolutely. The only thing that makes this another story is that it's Harvard. What Harvard did, and much worse than what Harvard probably did, happens in every company in America every day. Almost every major corporation in America today, well over 90%, monitor email, phone calls, text messages, internet access, and virtually anything else you do to communicate at work.
Mm. And what have you understood in reading about this story? And we have a pretty extensive statement from two of the deans at Harvard about their policy to search employees' email records. And it's pretty specific. I mean, they say they will only do it under extraordinary circumstances, that they will inform the person who has been searched after the fact or shortly after the fact. How does that compare to the average workplace policy out there?
Well, Harvard's policy, which may not be the same as its behavior, is actually very good. Most employers have either no policy at all or a policy that says they reserve the right to monitor anything they want to, any time they want to, for any reason they want to.
Mm.
Now, the thing about Harvard that nobody knows except the administration of Harvard is why they were really conducting this investigation. Were they trying to find out who was involved in the cheating, or were they trying to find out who exposed the cheating and embarrassed Harvard?
Mm.
The first would be a totally legitimate investigation. The other would be a cover-up.
Well, my understanding, I mean, from their statement, and by the way, we did ask someone from Harvard University to join this conversation. They just referred us to the statement. That my understanding is that there was information sent to the resident deans about this particular case, and that some of this information eventually was passed on. So that led them to search the resident deans to figure out who passed this information on. And the idea, according to the statement from Harvard, was they're concerned about protecting student privacy. So it's this interesting case of you've got folks at Harvard saying that the privacy of the deans is being invaded, and then Harvard saying, no, what we were doing was about protecting student privacy in this.
Give me a break.
Okay, I mean, you don't buy that.
I feel a little sorry, not very sorry, for this kid who got thrown out of Harvard for cheating. But let's be real. The reason Harvard's trying to find out who leaked this information is not because they might have embarrassed a student who deserved to be embarrassed. They embarrassed Harvard.
Mm-hmm. Carol Rose, what do you think?
Yeah, I think Louis Maltby's exactly right about that. I mean, they say that there's a distinction between the content and the subject line, but in fact, all they were looking for was who forwarded that subject line. So they got the who, the when, the where, and a lot of the what in terms of that. So this distinction between the subject line and content is just irrelevant. And I think this case really illustrates that. It raises serious questions about, for example, universities or government entities using secrecy and then justifying surveillance. Because, gee, we stamped something confidential, now we can surveil you to find out if you might have forwarded it. A lot of information is leaked by whistleblowers, for example, would be then subject to this kind of surveillance and snooping. And then beyond that, again, it goes back to the fact that the government, as we learned with the Petraeus scandal, can go even further and look at both the content and the subject line of your emails, see who you associate with, when you associate with them, where you are when you associate with them, and what you're talking about. It's an incredible intrusion on our privacy. And increasingly, there's no distinction between having employers do that and having employers give that same information over to law enforcement. Mm-hmm. And so that's why a lot of the pending bills, both here in the Massachusetts legislature and in Congress, would provide that kind of privacy. And it's important that people get involved and understand we need to update the law to keep pace with the changes in technology.
So tell us about the proposed legislation. What are you referring to specifically?
Well, there's two pieces of legislation. Here in Massachusetts, the Electronic Privacy Act, which was introduced by Senator Spilka and Representative Waltz, is actually working its way through the legislature. There's already 60 supporters, so that's a huge deal compared to previous years when we've tried to do this kind of thing. And then at the national level, Senator Lofgren has introduced, actually just very recently on March 6th, an update to the Electronic Communications Privacy Act. And there's never been state law protection. It still isn't. And the federal law was last updated in 1986. Mm. I think we still had rotary phones back then.
Yeah.
So, you know, the principles haven't changed since the time here in Massachusetts when the Fourth Amendment went in, when we didn't want the government snooping in our personal papers and effects. Now our personal papers and effects may be in the cloud.
Louis Maltby, are you at all encouraged with this kind of proposed legislation, both on the state level and the federal level, that maybe these laws will be brought up to date, since the age of the rotary phone?
Well, it's a mixed blessing. On the one hand, the legislation that I've seen, which is the federal legislation, I have not seen the Massachusetts legislation, only updates protection for privacy where the government is involved. which is certainly a good thing. The FBI and the CIA should not be reading our email without a good reason and probably a court order. What concerns me is that government snooping pales in comparison with employer snooping. The chances that your boss, that the CIA read any of our email yesterday was infinitesimal. The chance that our bosses read our email last week were probably better than 50-50.
Do we really know that? I mean, what do we know? I mean, I'm sure...
We know that 90% plus of all companies in America admit that they monitor.
90%?
Over 90%.
Wow. Wow. All right.
And so we need protection against government snooping, to be sure, but we need protection against employer snooping even more, and there's not much momentum behind that.
Louis Maltby, let me ask you just about a sort of couple of cases that might not be clear to people. Let's say I have, or an employee has, a company-provided cell phone. I bring that cell phone home. I send some private texts on it. Nothing that would incriminate me criminally, but may compromise the way my employer views me at work. Does my employer have a right to see those text messages?
Well, it depends on where they are physically located. If it's the company's phone, the company can take the phone back anytime it wants to and search it completely, and anything that's in there they find is legally theirs. It was their phone. Where it gets complicated is, in many cases, there's little or no information in the phone itself. It's all in a computer at AT&T or Verizon or someone else. And the employer is going to have somewhere between a very difficult and impossible time trying to get the information from the third-party carrier.
Listeners, we're talking about the right to privacy in the digital age. Does your employer have the right to monitor your emails, your text messages, your telephone conversations at work? What problems, what issues does this raise in your mind? Give us a call. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. And we've got a couple of folks already on the lines. I want to just read Kurt Gable writes on Facebook, if you don't think your work email or instant messenger is up for grabs, you are extremely disillusioned. Can't believe Harvard professors didn't know this was coming. What about that, Carol Rose? Is Kurt's point that of all folks, Harvard professors should have understood that this stuff was up for grabs?
No, I loved in your initial comment. You said they were shocked and dismayed. Dismayed, yes. Shocked, they shouldn't have been.
Yeah.
I think all of us need to understand that right now there's very little protection for privacy, and people need to know that. And yet, we should have those protections. That's what the Fourth Amendment was about. If you think it's not okay for people, whether it's your government or your employer, to go into your house and read your personal mail, open the envelopes, and I was certainly raised never to open somebody else's envelope, why would it be okay for either my employer or my government to do the same? It's time for the principles that have really kept this country very safe and free for a long time to be updated so that we have those same protections. And it's not weighing protections against government intrusion against employer. It's let's do both. I think every employee, when you interview for a job or if you have a job where you feel secure enough to do this, ask your employer, what are your policies? They might have legal recourse if the policy itself has been violated. That's a contract violation. And if not, maybe just get people together and say, we would like to work in an environment where we feel safe to say and do what we want. And if you're not going to give us that environment, see what kind of negotiating power you may have. It's tough because right now a lot of people want to just keep their jobs, so it's very hard to have those conversations. But it's important that those of us who have job security be willing to do that.
But this is a conversation you might be able to have. If you go to the boss and say, we think we're going to organize a union, you're going to get fired. Don't have that conversation. You
right.
can't have it. But most bosses really do not have any great desire to read your personal email, and they don't really particularly want the people in IT reading your personal email for fun either. If a large number of employees were to go to the boss and say the right way, boss, we understand that sometimes you have to read our email or check the internet sites we go to. We'd like there to be some rules. Can we talk about this? Most employers would probably be willing to have the conversation. The reason there's no privacy is because the systems that are sold to employers don't have any privacy built in. The employer would have to take some initiative And the easiest thing is to do nothing. And if employees don't say they want rules, why is the employer going to be willing to take the trouble to write them?
Let's go to the phones. We've got a bunch of people lined up who want to get in on this conversation. Let's go to Sam, who's calling from Newton. Hi, Sam. You're on the air.
Hi. How's it going?
Very well. Glad to have you. What's your thought today?
My thoughts were sort of, at what point did everyone sort of think that they were entitled to personal time at work? For instance, I own a small business, and for me anyway, it's small enough that it's not a problem. But I always wonder, like, if you have your computer at work and your phone is given to you by your job, you are then a representative for your company. So at what point do you think you should get away with sending anything personal, innocuous or otherwise, on their computer or their phone, and then being outraged when they ask you, you know, why are you saying this or why are you going there?
I think it's a great question, Sam. And Lewis, let me get you to respond to Sam. But I just want to ask a question to Sam, and that is, Sam, where do you think the line is? In other words, as a business owner, I completely respect what you're saying about a computer that you provide your employees at work. But let's say they bring a company-provided cell phone home or are working on your Wi-Fi network after work hours. Do you still have access to that information?
Well, I would say that nowadays, with the cost of everything being what it is, the ability to buy your own devices is not out of the reach of most people,
mm-hmm.
especially anyone who has a job to the level of which they get their own computer. So it goes to your panelist's point about opening their mail. If it's on their email account from their computer, you absolutely have no right to touch it. But if it's on your computer, it's your tool.
Sure.
So why should they be able to use your tool for their means and not be sort of called to stand up for what they've done with it?
No, Sam, I'm glad you put this on the table. Lewis Malte, go ahead.
Well, I have a question for Sam and other employers who take this line, because I've heard it many times before. Well, did you send your employees any emails last night on their home computer? Most employers do. It happens every day. Do you send your employees text messages on their personal cell phones over the weekend? Do you call them at home when they're not working on their personal cell phones? Let's get real. That happens every day. It's a standard operating procedure in work today. So if it's okay for an employer to send you an email on your home computer on your time, why isn't it okay for an employee to send a 5-minute email on the company's computer on work time? It's a two-way street.
What do you think, Sam?
Companies should be held responsible for anything sort of off-color that is sent to their employee that way. I mean, that sword should cut both ways, for sure.
Sam, thanks so much for the call. We really appreciate you chiming in. Let's go to Joe, who's calling from Melbourne, Florida. Hi, Joe. You're on the air.
Hi. Good afternoon. I served as an employee assistance director for many years, and the organization provided me the materials I needed, a cell phone, a computer. But I'm promising confidentiality to my clients. And so I went to the organization and I said, while I respect and appreciate the tools, it would be opening up the possibility of a breach of confidentiality, and perception is reality for many places. And so it's really, I think all of us have to be alert to the possibilities, use our own devices if we don't want something to be said. I agree with the previous caller. I shouldn't be sending emails or communications on the company's property while I'm doing my job. If I go to lunch, I use my own cell phone, etc. But I did want to bring up that I think we each have a responsibility to think about the confidentiality, what we're exposing, and also exposing others.
Hmm. Joe, I really appreciate the call. Carol, you were nodding your head when Joe was making this point. Does it make sense what he's saying?
Sure. I mean, think about all the jobs that it's not about sending personal or off-color emails. It may be protected attorney-client privilege or maybe reporter source privilege. It may be a psychotherapist privilege. So there might be a lot of conversations that are work-related that you need to be able to have and somehow have the confidence that your employer won't be trolling through your work email and looking for things that you're doing. And frankly, it's not even good for business. I think it's important to understand that if we are in an innovation economy, an information economy, you want to create many employers would like to create a condition where there's trust, where there's creativity, where there's innovation. And if you feel like somebody's constantly looking over your shoulder at everything you're doing, it's pretty hard to have an innovative, safe, and thus thriving innovation economy. Now, that's not true for all employers and employees. the other thing I would just say with regard to the first gentleman who called, you know, if you want to have those lines that are very, very strict between what's work and what's personal, then I would, you know, it's very hard to have telecommuting in those situations. It's very hard to have employees who maybe need to be available to you round the clock, depending on the kind of business you run. So what's good for the goose is good for the gander. If you're going to make those lines, it may, again, undermine your ability to be an effective business in an innovation economy.
Mm. Lewis Maltby, how do we avoid the privacy trap? Because in many ways, this seems to be a little bit of a trap that people sort of set for themselves, or at least get ensnared in.
Well, until recently, there really wasn't any way out. There are times when your boss needs to send you an email at home. There's times when you need to send a personal email between 9 and 5. That's the world. But now what you can do is bring your smartphone to work, and before you send a message, make sure that you're not on the company's Wi-Fi network, that you're on some other Wi-Fi network, and send your messages that are sensitive that way. It's your phone. Your boss can't demand you turn it over so they can inspect it. And it's not their Wi-Fi network, so they don't have access to the information. It's really not that hard to get yourself some privacy with the technology that's available today.
So people, in some cases, that probably takes a little bit of rethinking, because I think people might think about a company-provided phone as a perk, you know, and basically it's a perk because it's a convenience, but let's face it, it means that you don't have to pay your monthly phone bill, right? So you might want to rethink. You might want to rethink that.
Nothing is free, including privacy.
Yeah, right. Okay. Let's take another call. Dennis is calling from Newton. Hi, Dennis. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I have to agree with the comment your commentator just made, because it's exactly how I operate. I make the assumption when I go to work, and just for a reference, I'm a baby boomer. I'm in my early 50s, so I'm new to technology, relatively speaking. But I make an assumption when I'm at work, if I'm on my work computer, if I'm on my work network, if I send an email to work, somebody's reading it, and that email lives forever. It lives on a million servers all over the Internet. Even, and I do agree that you have to send personal emails at work. You know, I have two kids, and I often have to respond to school. But even if I log into my personal account, I'm still on the company network. I make an assumption somebody's going to see that email. But I will switch off on my cell phone the company Wi-Fi if I want to send a personally sensitive email. The thing that I actually would say is, I don't think this is the primary topic, whether or not you have an expected right to privacy at work. I really don't think you do. It's the company network. It's the company resources. The bigger question, I think, is, it was one of the other commentators, the bigger worry that I have is, who's reading my emails on my personal account? I know somebody's reading them at work. I just take that for granted. It's the thought that, who's really reading emails outside of work? I think that's the bigger topic. I agree with the commentator earlier who said the only reason this story is germane is because it's Harvard.
That was Carol Rose, executive director of the American Civil Liberties Union here in Massachusetts. Dennis, thanks so much for your call. You may be a baby boomer, relatively new to all this technology, but it sounds like you're pretty wise about it. Final question for you, Carol and Lewis, and that is, to get these policies right, if for businesses to get these policies right, is it good ultimately for business? Carol, let me start with you.
Well, absolutely, it's important. I mean, freedom and technology go hand in hand. It's good for business to create a safe environment, an innovative environment, an environment of trust. And so you want people to be creative. You want them to feel like they can do that. And you're not going to be able to do that if they think, you know, Big Brother, the employer, is looking over their shoulder. And then beyond that, all of us as citizens need to be concerned about our democracy when there's simply no system of checks and balances to prevent the government or local police officer from doing the same thing without a warrant requirement.
Mm. Lewis Maltby, let me give the final word to you. Same question. I mean, we've been talking about sort of the rights of employees, but does this make good business sense?
No, it doesn't. And most employers are going ahead, they're monitoring things they really shouldn't monitor, and nothing happens, and they think, well, what's the harm to me as an employer? Well, I'll tell you what it is. A lot of the monitoring is being done for fun by the people in IT. And it's going to get out someday. Some employee is going to find out that kid down in IT was reading her letter to her husband that was of a romantic nature, and she's going to be furious. And all of her coworkers are going to be furious, and now it's too late.
All right.
The harm's been done.
Well, let's leave it there. This is obviously a hugely important discussion that's going to go on. And Radio Boston listeners, you can continue the conversation at radioboston.org. Carol Rose, Executive Director of the American Civil Liberties Union of Massachusetts, thanks so much for coming in.
Nice to be here.
Very good to have you. And Louis Maltby, President of the National Work Rights Institute, which helps to improve legal protection of human rights in the workplace. Louis Maltby, thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Listeners, stay with us. Much more to come. This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks with Sasha Pfeiffer.